Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, welcome back. Man, 2 hours down. All right, 888-914-9149. If you get a busy signal, and you might, just hit redial. I promise you, we'll try as hard as we can to get you on the air. Let's start with Kate now in Salmon, Idaho. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Patrick. I have a question about how when Catholic married couple, I've heard it said that we're responsible or we have to get each other to heaven. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking in the context that a friend of mine and I were oddly enough talking about tattoos that our children had yesterday and how, oh, you got to just, you know, pray for them as they go along their walk. And I said, well, you know, I at one time when they were teenagers, I asked our priest, you know, am I going to be held accountable for the mistakes I've made or whatever that decisions my children are making? And he said, your responsibility is to get your husband to heaven and yourself, and the children, as they, you know, leave the house and grow up, they're responsible for their working out their salvation with God. So I just briefly said to her, well, you know, we're just responsible for our spouses. And she's evangelical, was raised Catholic. And she said, oh, well, we'll have to talk about that another time. And I thought, you know, I'd love to just be able to give her a little bit of scripture or whatever, something that I could just kind of succinctly explain to her or give her something to ponder in regards to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with the premise that the husband and the wife are to help each other get to heaven. Let's begin there. And you're right about that. That is the essential matter of the ongoing sacrament of marriage. And by that, I don't mean the form and the matter of the sacrament itself, but that's the matter of marriage, is to in this lifelong sacrament, to give oneself completely to your spouse and to receive your spouse's gift of self completely. And of course, that means many things, but it, I think, primarily means to assist each other on the road to heaven. And so if we just consider that this life is the road to heaven, Jesus said, the road is wide and well-traveled that leads to perdition, and the gate is narrow and few find it that leads to eternal life. Therefore, strive to enter by the narrow gate. So I think maybe with that in mind of what Jesus says, that we're on this road, we're either on one road or the other. You know, you can't be on both roads at the same time. You're on either one or the other. And so if your commitment is to love and serve and protect and honor your spouse, well, all of that is ordered toward salvation. It's not ordered toward anything other than salvation, and that's our final cause in any case, is to see God face to face, to be with God for all eternity in heaven for those who love him. So I think it is imbued with the reality that marriage as a sacrament, and this is true of marriage in general, even if it's not sacramental, it's designed for the mutual support and upbuilding of the spouses. So if you talked about it in that way, perhaps, you know, that might be one way to do it. The key here, it seems to me, is just to let her know that Jesus raised the natural institution of marriage to the level of a sacrament. And he did so by being present at the wedding of Mary and Joseph. Jesus was there, right literally there, in between the two of them when they were married, because the incarnation had already taken place. We also see that Jesus, of course, he, in a certain sense, hallows the wedding at Cana by his presence there, and also by turning water into wine as his first miracle. So this is another reminder to us that marriage has been raised to a higher level. You know, there's something more to it than simply a man and a woman living together. That's natural marriage, and that's good. You know, we certainly need that, and we do recognize that. But it is important to see that there's something more than that. So maybe you could talk to her along those lines and see what her reaction is. Did she disagree with the premise of having to seek to help your husband get to heaven? Or what was the nature of her, you know, we'll have to talk about that later comment?
Yeah, I think that it was probably because she, are you still there?
Of course I am. Where would I go?
Oh, sorry.
I'm here for you, Kate.
It suddenly
this is my job.
It suddenly went quiet. Sorry. I thought maybe my phone died. No, I think that, you know, she's probably coming from the standpoint that, you know, it's like by faith and grace alone that we're saved and we can do nothing to get ourselves to heaven. I'm pretty sure that's what she would say. But okay. I did say, well, it's a sacrament. And she looked at me questioning and I thought, you know this stuff because you're a raised Catholic. And they even kind of went towards sort of, I guess you'd call like charismatic Catholics and had their babies baptized in a creek, you know, by a monk. And and then they kind of went, you know, off on their own path. But, you know, so we've had many of these conversations and she knows the Bible very, very well.
Okay.
But, you know, I said, well, look, why would we have to be equally yoked if we weren't trying to walk the path to heaven together?
Right.
And then she just kind of, you know, and it was at my store and she was, you know, we chat and, you know, I chat with customers and then she just kind of left, but I've known her for, you know, almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because we were talking about our children's tattoos and, you know, 10 years ago, this was like an evil thing, but now that her children have tattoos and they're very meaningful and they, you know, are so personal and blah, 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 it's like, it's okay now.
But,
you know, so we were specifically, though, referring to our children's path to heaven and the mistakes that they make and how we kind of have to step aside and, you know, just pray for them and love them and hope that they'll do better or, you know, follow God's path for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's for them to discern, whereas our spouses, we do that together. And so I just thought, you know, I'm going to just pop a text over to her and see if we can, you know, kind of start a conversation.
Yeah, that's smart. I think it's good that you're doing this. And I like the gradual way you're doing it. You're not trying to accomplish it all at once, but you're taking time and, you know each other. So that's a nice basis to work from.
Yeah.
That article on tattoos.
Yeah, she's very respectful. Yeah.
Yeah, that article on tattoos, physical graffiti, it's available on the show page if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick. And you can grab the link to it, maybe text it to her for her consideration. It's thoroughly biblical. In fact, it's entirely biblical.
Okay.
It's just looking at what does the Bible say and what are some of the nuances about keeping your body, you know, pure and all of those things. So that might be another conversation starter.
Okay, and... Yeah, and it's funny because my daughter is now a tattoo artist, so I have to take lots of deep breaths with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then when her daughter wanted a tattoo and she said, you know, in the Bible it says that you can't, you know, you shan't mark your body or whatever. And her daughter said, Mom, do you eat ham? She said, oh, well, that just stopped me right there. Don't they, you know, you raise them and they, so anyway, so I said, wow, we have a lot of things to kind of say gulp about.
Yeah. Well, one thing to remember is that I know that was a glib comment on the part of the daughter, but that certainly doesn't settle the issue. In Leviticus, for example, Leviticus 17 comes to mind and other passages, there are certain kind of all lumped in together, certain prohibitions on things, some of which are purely provisional, purely temporary, and like don't trim the sides of your hair, for men around the temples of your head. This is why ultra-Orthodox Jewish men typically wear the very long, the peos, the side locks, as they call them. So the hair grows really, really long down, almost like ponytails in a way, on either side of their head. That's because they take that passage in Leviticus literally, don't trim the hair. That's why they have that. But in some of these same passages, in one sentence, it says, don't sell your daughters into prostitution. Don't trim the hair of your beard. Don't do this. So unfortunately, if only it were easier to, you know, if those prohibitions had been maybe categorized differently, where the ones that were temporary only or provisional only were in one group, and then the other ones that are permanent, like don't sell your daughters into prostitution, those are clearly something that doesn't change with the times. It's not just because the new covenant is here that now we can eat pork, and now we can, what does that mean? You can sell your daughters into prostitution? Obviously, it doesn't mean that. So I understand the glib response that the daughter gave, but that certainly does not settle the issue. Now, the article that I'm referencing, it does go into some of those issues, and it takes into account some of these prohibitions, such as the one against tattooing. But ultimately, if you ask me, Kate, I think the real issue here is not what does the Bible say, because it says a lot of things and people are really good at explaining that away. Or they can do mental gymnastics and rationalize something. Well, you know, in this case, I think really the place where you can gain the most ground would be to say, we all can agree that pride is a sin. Pride is the chief of all the sins. It's the capital sin of the seven deadly sins. And, you know, St. Thomas says that inordinate love of self is the root of all sin. So every single sin of whatever kind ultimately is traceable to pride in some way. And the issue of pride and vanity is something that I think underlies this tattoo mania that is so rampant right now in the other forms of body art and piercings and things like that. So maybe that's the place where you can spend time talking with her. Anyway, I hope that's helpful. I do appreciate it. Let's go now to Anne in San Diego. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to see if you could share your insights on a dilemma that I have regarding the part from the Bible that says, as we are all sinners, you can't throw stones, and versus using to show mercy, in other words, because, in other words, if we're all sinners, we shouldn't speak out on any issues of moral obligation if we right. see it, because we are sinners, versus using fraternal correction to... By that, the Bible says you can also show mercy. So that's applied to a specific situation okay. that occurred. We have a Eucharistic ministry, extreme ministers who are occasionally showing up repeatedly with modesty issues. And so when is it appropriate? Is it if we are all sinners, should we not mention this as a potential problem, or just let it slide versus the throwing the stones?
Yeah, and I understand that you understand that it's a false dichotomy, but for some people they make that false dichotomy. It's a fallacy to do this, to pit what Jesus said about the woman caught in adultery, and the men who gathered there with stones to stone her to death, because that's what the law of Moses prescribed. They were trying to trap Jesus, and you heard the reading the other day. And so Jesus says to them, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. And then, of course, they all fade away because nobody is without sin. And then he says, where your accusers, your condemners, is there no one left to condemn you? She says, no. And he says, well, then neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. So there's the acknowledgement that what she did was sinful. He doesn't condemn her. He certainly does not expose her to the rigors of the law in terms of the death penalty there. And he also tells her, don't do this anymore. So the acknowledgement of the sin. He also says in Matthew 18, if you have something against your brother, go to him in private and tell him. And if he won't listen to you, then take two or three witnesses. So Jesus talks about escalating this. You start small, and if you need to build up to a higher level, then escalate it. So there is a time and place where you do need to intervene. And if the two or three witnesses are not sufficient and he won't listen, then you take it to the church. If he won't listen even to the church, he says, then treat him as a tax collector or a Gentile. And that has, you know, the connotations of being excommunicated. So there is a time and place when it's necessary to do that. It's how you do it and what the circumstances are. So to your example, Anne, about the immodest dress in church, that's typically, I mean, by rights, that's the job of the pastor. He's the shepherd of the flock. And so if he's vigilant and he sees, especially, how can you not see, if there are, and I don't know if these are men and women or just women or a combination of both.
Just women.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if they're distributing Holy Communion and they're wearing provocative clothing or overly revealing clothing, he has a duty before anyone else to put a stop to it. And he can simply say, he can be very gentle about it, but he can say there's a certain dress code. If you're going to be assisting with distributing Holy Communion, there's a certain dress code, no low-cut blouses, no short skirts, no sleeveless, he can give a dress code that's reasonable and say, if you want to serve in this capacity, great, we'd love to have you serve, but here's the guideline and we ask you to adhere to it. And then if somebody doesn't adhere to it, then you say, I'm sorry, you can't distribute Holy Communion if you don't follow this guideline. That's an easy fix. Now, maybe the pastor is not interested in getting into, a confrontation. That could be one reason why he's not doing it. I don't know. But you certainly have the right to say, and do it respectfully, but write an email or talk to him and just say it is distracting and it's not conducive to virtue, shall we say. So could you please address that? No pun intended. That might be a way to handle it. And I'll leave you with one thought, Anne. When I was back in the day, one of our pastors, Father Lewis Marks, who's since gone on to his eternal reward, may he rest in peace, he had signs. In the vestibule of the church, there was a sign that said, this is a house of God, this is a place of prayer and worship, and modest attire is required. And if you're not dressed modestly, then please don't come inside. And it gave some specifics. No short shorts, no mini skirts, no bare midriffs, no revealing blouses, etc. So it was right there in black and white. If somebody came in, they would see that. And as I recall, that seemed to screen out 99% of any of those problems. That's easily done. All right. Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. Let's go now to Mike in Bayfield, Colorado. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Was calling in regards to your comments on Citibank.
Uh-huh.
And it was dawning on me there that it's in their interest to pay for this, because then they don't have all these women that are going to be taking time off for taking care of their babies or sick time or anything else. So it's good for their bottom line to make sure they don't have people having babies.
Maybe so. I have a feeling that ideologically they're more interested in trying to quote unquote fight back against laws like what we've seen passed in Florida and in other states, Texas and other states. It's possible that maybe there is a bottom line component to all this, but I think they're trying to position themselves as freedom fighters. They want to appeal to the secular mindset. Hey, look at us. We're defending women's rights to go and kill their children, and we'll pay for it. We'll pay for their airfare, and we'll pay for their hotel. How great we are. I think if I had to guess, it seems to be more of a posturing thing than the bottom line, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was in there somewhere.
It could be. It plays into all sides that makes it good for them to make money off this deal.
Yeah. Well, don't get between people and their money. That's for sure. Thank you. Let's go to Ilka now in Tampa. Hi, Ilka.
I am calling because yesterday I had a conversation with a friend of mine for years. She's not Christian. Well, she was in the Christianity for a little bit, but she's not nothing. Let's put it like that. So we were talking about, we started kind of like gender ideology and things like that. So I'm like, but you cannot, it doesn't matter what you do, surgery or anything, if you're a woman, you're still going to be a woman. And it's not that she is gay or anything. We were just talking. So she's like, no, you, whatever you think, you can be. And I'm like, so you're telling me, so I give her this weird example. So you're telling me that if I think I'm a shark, I am a shark because I'm thinking I'm a shark? And she's like, yes. I'm like, but that doesn't make any sense. I don't have the blood of the shark. I don't have anything. The bones of the shark. I don't. I cannot be underwater.
Ilka shark doo 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 doo. Ilka shark doo 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 doo. I'm sorry about that. I couldn't resist. Couldn't help it.
Well, the thing is that I started laughing when she said that. Yeah, and I'm like, but And she told me I'm condescending, that I cannot tell her what she can believe or not, that I'm like the liberals. That
you're like the liberals. I mean, I would assume that she was probably liberal herself if she believes in that. Well, you can say, no, it's not condescending to tell you that the bridge is out. I mean, there's a storm and the bridge washed out. And I know it because I was just over there and I saw that the bridge is washed out. So I'm warning you, don't go down that street in the dark while it's raining, because if you do, your car's going to go into the water and you're going to drown. That's not condescending. I'm just telling you the truth. You can accept it or not accept it. Ask her, what is her race? Do you know? Is she white? Is she Hispanic? Is she Asian?
Yes.
What is she?
No, she's white.
Okay.
I'm Hispanic. She's white.
Okay. Ask her if she can be a black woman. Ask her, can you be a black woman? Not you, but her. And she's going to say, well, no. And I said, well, why not? Well, because I'm not black. Okay, but what if you identify as black? You're white, but what if you identify as black? And what if you want to get a... You know, maybe you want to get into a college, and affirmative action will give you a better chance at getting into a college if you're black than if you're white. So why don't you just check off the box African-American? And then when you go for your interview and you're talking to the admissions person at the college and they say, oh, wait a minute, it says you're African-American, that you're black, but you're not black, you're white. Oh, no, I'm black because I identify as black. Ask her in the real world where normal people who think real thoughts about reality live, ask her if she would be able to do that. And she's ultimately, even if she won't admit it to you, and that's probably why she engaged in name calling, because she didn't have an answer. She knew you were right. And so she didn't have an answer. So she just said, well, you're condescending. You can say, no, I'm not condescending. I'm just telling you the truth. That's how I would approach it. Ilka, I've got to take a break, but sometimes these dumb ideologies, all you need is just to poke it a little bit and it falls apart very quickly. Thank you. Hang in there. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We're back, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Rogelio now in Austin, Texas. Good morning, Rogelio.
Hey, Patrick, how's it going?
Going fine, thank you.
Hey, I just have a question about the resurrection. So I know that on Good Friday we celebrate how Jesus was crucified, but Jesus says he was resurrected in 3 days. And on Sunday, Palm Sunday, it's not 3 days from that Friday. So I'm just wondering if I'm missing something there.
It's a figure of speech, and it doesn't mean literally 3 full days. It means any part of the 3 days. So Jesus died on Friday, Good Friday, and the time of the afternoon, he died, we're told, at 3 p.m. So that's the first day. Then he was in the tomb all of Saturday, Holy Saturday. That's the second day. And then he was in the tomb for at least part of Sunday. He rose, we don't know when exactly, on Sunday, and that's part of the third day. So the three taken together are, as a figure of speech, called 3 days and three nights. It wasn't intended to mean literally three 24-hour periods of time.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Thank you so much.
Sure. Yeah. Sometimes these answers are easier than others. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go now to Doris in Lexington, Kentucky. Hi, Doris.
I had a quick question. I listened yesterday, which I do most every morning. And a lady called in and she was speaking about her son and daughter-in-law.
Uh-huh.
You may remember that conversation.
Well, refresh my memory.
About how they had separated herself from the family. We have a similar situation that has gone on for years, and I've been sad about it, but I've overcome it, just accepting that it is what it is. My son said to me that biblically and in the wedding vows, it says a son will leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Are they taking that a little too far? As far as separating herself completely.
Oh, in other words, cutting off the
family. She does not want to be around.
Cutting off the family, I see.
Yes. Nothing to do with his brother or sister. Very little with his brother.
Mm-hmm. I would approach it this way, Doris. No, that verse, and Jesus he recites that verse in Matthew chapter 19, verses 1 forward. He refers to that verse, and it's referring to the establishment of the covenant of marriage by God in the garden. And so it's explaining or it's describing the nature of marriage, that when you leave your family and you go to start your own family, you and your wife or you and your husband, you cleave together. And that's a euphemism for sexual intercourse. The two become one flesh. That's a euphemism for sexual intercourse, because it's through that physical union that children come into existence. It's also a definition of or a description of the nature of marriage between one man and one woman. This is not saying that he turns his back on his family and cleaves to his wife. It's not saying any of those things. And you can show that because the fourth commandment is honor your father and mother. So God is not going to establish one thing that would be at variance with another thing. So the commandment to honor your father and mother still stands. And so if, because the wife is being persnickety or she doesn't like you or something like that, and there's no good reason. Now, let's say that you and your husband, I mean, I know you're not, but let's say that you were drug dealers or pornographers or, you know, you were doing some insane, terrible things and they didn't want anything to do with you. Well, that's different, and they would have a right to do that. But within the commandment to honor your father and mother, they don't have a right to simply cut you out of their lives because they don't like you or she doesn't like you. And in his case, if his wife is the one who says, well, we're not going to be seeing your parents anymore, I hate to say this, but that's a sign of weakness on his part, that if he doesn't stand up and say, well, no, we are going to have some kind of a relationship with my family. It's important to me. It's important to our children to know their grandparents, etc. That's the kind of stand that he would need to take in his own way. But regardless, the fact is that the commandment says, honor your father and mother, and that would be directly implicated in a scenario where the wife just says, no, we're not going to have anything to do with your parents. So
yeah.
Quoting what
that's
Jesus
basically
says doesn't,
what it is.
Quoting what Jesus says doesn't fix, it doesn't resolve their problem. It doesn't prove their point.
Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah.
They have children that are pretty much grown now. There's two out of school and one is married, and the two boys that are at home, one's a senior and one's a ninth grader. So we helped them really a lot with their children when they were young, mm-hmm. and loved every minute of it. But now it's, and I know that my daughter-in-law, she's very talented, very creative, and she would say to you that she's OCD about most everything. And
well, I would say,
quite frankly, I'm not.
Yeah. I would say grow up. This is an immature way to act, and it's certainly not Christian if you're not going to take the commandments seriously. Yeah, now I'm sure you can't, as mother-in-law, say that to her in quite that same way. That might inflame things. But what a shame that in her stubbornness, or I don't know what's causing it. I have no way of knowing, but it's a shame. Continue to pray. Continue to keep your door open. Keep the light on. Let them know that you love them. And maybe in time, things will change. And often they do, especially, and this is unfortunate, but especially when there's trial or difficulty or tragedy and they realize they do need to lean on family members. I hate when it comes to something like that, but sometimes people have to hit the bottom before they realize that they need to reach out. I'm sorry to hear this, Doris. I hope that's helpful to you. Thank you. Let's go now to Mark in Chicago. Hi, Mark.
Hey, Patrick. Good morning. Just a quick question for you. We had a discussion with my evangelical friends about Hebrews 13:10, and it says that we have an altar mm-hmm. from which those who minister have no right to eat. Mm-hmm. And we had a little disagreement on what is it exactly pertaining to. If you wonder, so I figure I could call Patrick so he can maybe okay. shed some light on that, please.
Yeah, well, thank in you. Context, see, the whole context of this passage and the other chapters surrounding Hebrews chapter 13, so starting in chapter 8, it's a contrast between Christ, our high priest, who offered a once-and-for-all sacrifice on the cross, versus the Old Testament priesthood, which it refers to here, talking about the bodies of animals whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest as a sacrifice for sin and are burned outside the camp. So this whole extended narrative is showing that all those old covenant animal sacrifices, not only did they not actually accomplish what they symbolized, but that Jesus, in his once-for-all sacrifice on the cross, he in himself and with his sacrifice, he did fulfill all of that. And so this is a reference to the Mass. This is a reference to the Holy Eucharist. We have an altar from which those who serve the tent have no right to eat. The reason they have no right to eat is because they have not accepted Jesus. They have not accepted his sacrifice for them. So in that period of time between our Lord's death on the cross and his resurrection and the destruction of Jerusalem, you know, somewhat slightly less than 40 years elapsed, and the temple sacrifices continued. And the Mosaic commandments and kosher food laws and all of those other things that were part of it, they continued. There was no need for it to continue because Jesus had fulfilled all of it in himself, and in particular by his death on the cross. So this is a reference without saying the word Mass or Eucharist. That's what it's referring to in context. And I'm sure that's probably what you were thinking, but I could understand why your evangelical Protestant friends wouldn't want to see that in the passage, because then that would mean that they would have to admit that this teaching of the Holy Eucharist and the Mass is indeed biblical, which it is. But I could see why they would try to explain that away and say that it didn't mean that.
And also, because we looked up the original tongue, and basically the tabernacle says booth. It's kind of like a tent. So it just threw additional confusion to it. Because, word tabernacle is just the English word, but it's not what the original says.
No, but I wouldn't worry about that, because the original tabernacle was a tent. So if you go back to start reading in Exodus chapter 25 through 30, and then again chapter 35 through 40, you'll see God giving Moses the description of this Ark of the Covenant that he wants fashioned, made out of acacia wood, covered with gold, with statues of angels on top of it. And then you see King David, he has a very nice tent. I mean, it was probably as nice a tent as there ever were one. That was the original temple, and it was makeshift, and it was portable. And eventually, Solomon actually built the for real temple the first time around, and that was this huge, gigantic structure. But the tabernacle is a word in English. It does mean booth, that's true, but it has a certain connotation because of what was in the booth. What was in the booth was the Ark of the Covenant. That's what was in the Holy of Holies. And what was in the Ark was the manna from the desert, which is a prefigurement of the Holy Eucharist. The staff of Aaron was there. The Ten Commandments themselves, the tablets, were in the Ark of the Covenant, and that was in the Holy of Holies. And that's what made it so important. So I wouldn't get bogged down in the English translation of tabernacle or booth, because it's not like a phone booth or a toll booth or some other kind of booth. This was the Holy of Holies, and that's what I would focus on if I were you.
It's excellent. Thank you very much, Patrick. That was excellent. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thanks for the call. I love talking about these issues in any case, so it's good for me. And how about a break? We will come right back. I'm trying to hit as many phone calls as we can in the time allotted, and that will run out soon. So thanks for your patience. I'm coming right back to you right after this. You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principalsclasses.com/Madrid.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
We're back. Thanks for listening. I just want to remind you, as we get close to the end of Lent, it'll be here before you know it. You can complete your Lenten journey with Close to Jesus to the Last, a 5-day spiritual walkthrough of Jesus' final days before his passion. With Father Rocky's guidance, we'll pause for an hour at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. Central Time each day to ponder the events that drew Jesus to Jerusalem, exploring each with specially selected music and prayers. Close to Jesus to the Last is a reverent transition from Lent to Easter, and it's next week right here on Relevant Radio. Thank you for helping us with that, and thanks for participating. Let's go to Emmanuel now in Los Angeles. Good morning, Emmanuel.
I hope everything's well with you.
It is. Thank you.
I was just having a good conversation with your screener. And what I would just want to say about Citibank and, you know, all of these companies, you know, the LGBT community, really thought, I guess, that people were just going to roll over and just accept it. And they just can't believe that people are still fighting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but these people are rich and powerful. Let me tell you, they have tentacles, you know, corporate America. And yeah, so I just went to court for my name change.
Okay.
And I was a female name, and now I'm back to my birth name. And
what happened?
Yeah,
tell me what happened.
I went up. It was like, you know, maybe about 15 people, or less than 15, I would say like maybe 10 or 12, getting their name changed. And I was the last person called, and everybody looked back when they called the female name, because there was like a man's voice saying, you know, present. And I was like, oh, great, you know? So I was the last person, and I went up, and it was like, you know, the judge asking me, like, okay, so you're female now, right?
Mm-hmm. Did you embrace the transgender ideology for a time?
I did. To be honest with you, I did. Mm-hmm. And but I saw that, you know, the phoniness, mm-hmm, of it all. And let me tell you, it's not confusion; it's possession.
It's what?
The possession.
Oh, okay. Like a diabolical possession.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Tell me about your specific situation, if you don't mind. I don't want to pry, but since you're calling, I assume you want to share.
I went up, and the judge was asking me, you know, now I'm a female. Are you a female now? And so I had to say yes, and then, like, you know, the gender mark got changed to male. And so he was like, you are a male now. So it was just amazing to me, and sad, too, at the same time, how the society has gone so low in playing pretend, you know.
What happened in your case, though? What happened? So you went down that road for a while. I think this is the question everybody would like to hear you answer, if you don't mind. You were living this transgender lifestyle for however long. What happened that made you decide to stop that?
I began to feel a need for God in my life.
Good.
I went to the dentist, and the dental assistant, she was Protestant. She handed a tract to me, and I held on to it, you know? And so that began to then ask my parents to send me my Bible from back home. And so
I bet they were happy to do that.
Oh, yeah, they sent it right away. And so I got it, and then I just, you know, began to remember how I used to read the Bible, you know, because I did have an encounter before my quote-unquote transition. You know, I had an encounter before that, what Protestants, you know, believe born-again experience, or metanoia for Catholics.
Right.
And I got with my ex, with the mother of my child, and we were staying in separate rooms, but one thing led to another, and then from there on, like, I felt like the Holy Spirit lead. And then from there on, everything just started to go bad.
That's good.
I lost my job.
Oh, it started to go bad. I'm sorry. I thought you meant you started to go back, like back to normal. Maybe I misunderstood.
No, 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 no. Bad. Just bad. Like, okay. Everything just kept falling apart. Yeah. So our relationship, I lost my job. I just, you know, yeah.
So what happened?
So then we ended up splitting up. We went back home. I went back home. And so then I got into truck driving. And then after being a truck driver, I got into doing meth.
Now, is this after or before the transgender phase?
Before.
Okay. So all of these things led up to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, you know, I was raped in the military.
Oh, no.
By my roommate.
Oh, no.
And he put something in my beer, and when I had gone to the bathroom, and then when I came out, I drank that beer, and I felt like I had drunk 24 beers.
Yeah.
And I had no control, but I didn't feel drunk like how I used to feel drunk. It was weird.
So he took advantage of you. I hope you reported him, and I hope he was court-martialed.
Yeah, that was the worst thing that I could have done, Patrick. Because it was, you know, you report someone and you're like blacklisted. Yeah, you're blacklisted. And it created a mess of problems. I was seeking, you know, to get him prosecuted. And yeah, you know, they stopped treating me. They kicked me out.
Was it ever prosecuted? I mean, was he ever court-martialed?
No, no, no.
Well, just as an aside, I mean, that's a very serious felony offense, and even more so, as I understand the Uniform Code of Military Justice, that you, I mean, if you're out of the military especially, I wouldn't let that go. I mean, I would raise that with the military police.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Yeah. No, no, it got taken care of, but I got screwed. I'm still screwed. Because they owe me 11 years back pay anyways, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah, and we don't have time to go into that. I'm sure it's fascinating, and I'd like to know more, but we're getting close to the end of the show. So if you could fast forward, what is it, if you can identify it, what is it that made you say, I'm going to stop this, I'm going to come back to my normal, real identity? What happened?
Okay, so then I began to transition, and around 2019, I began reading the Bible. Like I was saying, my parents sent me the Bible, and three nights praying on my knees, begging God to please forgive me. And all of a sudden, I began to have a seizure, and then after that, like, I felt like I just woke up, you know, and I felt a hand push me from behind, literally push me from the wall. So that's what I'm saying. It's not confusion. It's a possession. It's these ideas that, you know, demonic entities put in people's minds.
Yeah.
To whatever, steal, rob, kill. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you need to act on them, though. Right. You need help.
That's right. Are you back to the sacraments
now? Christ. 100%. I go to the main daily mass. I have a contrite heart and a contrite spirit. And you know, I pray for these people. honestly. I pray for them, for these are souls.
Yeah. This is an amazing story, and it really deserves more time. I just wish there were more time. So please don't misunderstand my having to move forward as anything other than just we don't have time. But this is a story you should continue sharing, Emmanuel. I really encourage you to do that. And I'm hopeful that maybe you have opportunities to share your own experience with other men who have gone down this path or women who are going down this path. You have a kind of built-in credibility because you've been there. And thank God for that dental assistant who gave you that tract. God bless her. And that was one way to help the process go in the direction it did. Thank you, Emmanuel, for sharing. I appreciate it very much. We'll go to Feasterville, Pennsylvania now and talk to Chris. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, Pat. I understand that in some cases, a Catholic, can receive the Eucharist up to twice in one day. My question is this. This morning, I was able to make the second half of a Mass.
Okay.
The second half only. I did receive the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. Am I correct that if I intend a whole Lenten Mass this evening that I can receive again?
Yeah, you can. You can receive twice in one day. It's not customary, but the church permits it, especially when there's a situation like, let's say you went to daily Mass on a Saturday, and then later that day there was a wedding Mass. You could receive Holy Communion again. So the church foresees situations like that.
Patrick, thank you very much.
You're welcome. That was easy. Thank you, Chris.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Let's go to Mike in New Berlin, Wisconsin. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Patrick.
Hi.
I'll try to make this brief, but I got to give you a little bit of a background real quickly. I've got a friend. We have friends who were divorced about 4 or 5 years ago. I keep in touch with, well, both of them, but the man was a friend of mine, and he's living out of state. He's developed a new relationship. It's actually a live-in relationship, but the bigger story is that, you know, he gets together with me a couple times a year when he's back in town to visit his grown children. And we're going to be visiting sometime soon, and he's talked to me about he's reading Amoris Laetitia, and I'm just wondering if you give me a little guidance, because I've kind of advised him or suggested in the past to talk to a priest, talk about annulment, talk about getting any new relationship, take care of the old relationship before you get the new relationship going on the right direction. But I'm a little concerned, so I want a little bit of maybe some guidance, because I don't want them to look at that as a loophole to say, well, I can just go back to sacraments and move on.
Yeah. So if he's divorced and remarried, is that the scenario?
Not yet remarried.
Not yet remarried. But he's planning to, or thinking about it?
Thinking about it, I think.
Okay. Is he sexually active with this woman?
I believe. I would guess, but I don't ask.
All right. Well, I mean, if he's trying to figure out how to avoid going to confession and or avoid seeking the annulment, the declaration of nullity, I mean, he needs to hear that this is what the church says. I mean, Jesus says if a man divorces his wife and remarries, he commits adultery. And every time Jesus says that in the Gospels, he says that. Now, in Matthew chapter 19, he adds one proviso. He says, if a man divorces his wife, except in the case of porneia, and marries another, he commits adultery. That means that he and she were not validly married in the first place. It was a form of sexual unlawfulness. So he needs to know if he's free, and that's the way to find out. And if he doesn't do that, then he's just trying to rationalize sin, and that never ends well. I'm sorry I don't have more time, Mike. Thank you. Until next time, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.